listen. Question. Discover. Understand. And apply. Welcome to Conversations.
A lot goes into growing food for Americans and the countries around the world. The ingredients for this, in the most fundamental way, requires good climate, water, soil, and farm workers. Today's guest, Manuel Cunha, is the president of the Nisei Farmers League, an organization that was founded in the early 1970s, an organization that focuses on farmers and farm workers. This is going to be a whole hour, and I know you're super busy, so thanks for giving me the time to sit with you today.
You're more than welcome.
Today's focus is on the farming workforce that all of us rely on every time we slide our chairs up to the kitchen table. So I'd say that's a fairly important group of people. You know, we're in Central Valley. We're in Fresno at the moment, and this is where your office is. But the organization's name sounds Japanese, Nisei. So what is the organization? How was it formed?
The organization was formed back in the early 60s, and became a organization with bylaws and everything else in 1970. But it was to protect the farmers and the farm workers from the activities of the UFW back then, of all of the stuff that was happening, that the UFW, the marches, the picketing, were very brutal on farm workers.
What's UFW? What is
the United Farm Workers of America.
Okay.
And so the organization was formed to protect the workers that work for the farmers, as well as the farm properties, because there was a lot of damage caused by the UFW on farms back then. And so the organization had formed and had about 1,800 members, and a large portion of that was Japanese Americans. And the reason they were formed is that they had already went through one taking of their property. And it was in 1942.
During World War II.
During World War II, when many of them had to go to relocation centers. And they lost their farms to the state, to the counties, etc. And this time, when this thing started, they were not going to lose their farms. And they were going to protect the farm workers that helped them during the crisis when they were taking care of their farms when the farmers were in relocation centers. So there's a definite, real close relationship.
Mm-hmm. Today, are you guys involved throughout the state of California or even beyond? What's the geographic area that you're involved with?
Our league is based in California. We have members in Arizona, Oregon, Washington, and Provo, Utah.
You're all over the place.
Yes.
How often do you get to Washington, D.C.?
In this last couple of years, we just about are being seen to be back there monthly.
Wow, a lot of involvement. Well, there's a lot needed, too, when you look at it. Now, about you, you've got a degree in crop science and agronomy, and then on top of that, you have a teaching credential. Now, it seems to me that this particular job that you have is kind of a marriage between the two. It requires technical understanding, but it also requires an ability to exchange information. How is that? I mean, how does that fit into the work that you're doing, that kind of background?
Well, being raised on a dairy up north in Vacaville and learning about agriculture and getting my degree in agriculture, plant science, and a teaching credential, the love for working in agriculture, teaching, helping. And then I had taught at the university and junior college and high school. But I think with that skill, it helped me to, first thing, for communications, speaking to people, talking with people, understanding, and being able to educate those people that don't know too much about agriculture. And in many times, our students were coming into agriculture but weren't sure what to do and what was agriculture, what was agribusiness, what was machinery or ag mechanics. So those skills have really very much really helped me back then, but also understanding the industry, you're able to speak very clearly when you're in meetings and hearings because you've actually lived it. And even today, I have a citrus ranch.
Well, you really are a spokesperson then for those who would maybe have a more difficult time communicating in our country. You're a voice to be heard.
Well, we believe in, at least I believe very strongly in our industry. And that industry is agriculture, which is everyday farmers, husbands and wives, they put their farm on the line with Mother Nature, with the markets. But to make that thing work, to make it work, you got to have the second part of that, and that's farm workers who really believe in working with the farmer. That's their job. We have workers that have been with farmers for 30, 40, 50 years and committed, and the farmers have taken care of their families, their children, and have helped them, convince them to make sure their kids go to school, to see what there is out there versus just saying, well, you're going to just be a farm worker. No, we've had that.
You know, there seems that from the farmers that I have met both here and across in various parts of the country, there's a strong work ethic amongst the group. And there's also a sense of family that I've noticed you have in that type of community. Now, the committees that you serve on, they're pretty diversified. The Agricultural Coalition of Immigration Reform, California Air Resource, even the Federal Reserve Board. How are these all connected with farmers and farm workers?
Well, these boards or these committees all tie around agriculture, and to be involved in these committees was the purpose of educating the staff, the agency, or the department about how agriculture operates, what goes on a farm, what does farm tractors mean, what does air quality research mean for agriculture rather than promulgating a regulation on a farm, is what impact does that have? And so being on these committees, it's helping to educate the staff, the agencies, and the research. We've spent a lot of time in research in air quality in California, with the California Resources Board, the federal EPA, and even our own local air district. So by being on these committees or these boards, you are there to help educate other members of the committee as well as, in this case, staff or people. And just like the Federal Reserve is to continue of educating on the importance of agriculture, but to give the information to their staff on the economics. And that is my job, is the economics of what happens with our farms, how much of our revenues and how much of our different commodities come in through the United States into our treasury. So the job that I'm diligent with is making sure that agriculture's numbers with our agriculture commissioners, our state secretaries of ag, all of those numbers have to come in, and then that's what we base our trade picture on, even how much food and how much dollars are being exported.
Do you have conversations about the ramifications of, say, new regulations that they're looking at? In other words, before, and then based on the knowledge that you provide them with and all the other knowledge, they make their decisions, maybe adapt, adjust somehow their initial ideas, and then test it again, you know, giving them feedback again once they actually implement this. So it's an iterative process that ultimately you're helping them ground truth it, basically, and have a successful program.
Yeah, the cumulative impact of other regulations is big today on agriculture. 30 years ago, it wasn't. But we've had more regulations. For an example, just for your understanding, last year, this office did a survey. And in that survey, we went out to our growers and asked, what agencies do you interact with? What departments do you interact with? What county, city, state, federal do you interact? The number that we have was 84 different entire entities that a farmer has to deal with.
That's amazing. I'm a hydrogeologist, worked on a lot of contamination projects. You know, a tough one is when you're managing maybe 7 to 10 agencies. And so I really can't fathom dealing with as many as you're dealing with. That's incredible. They all have, it's compartmentalized. So I imagine you end up bumping up against a lot of rough edges when you're trying to implement everything as one.
Well, you know, can't.
Yeah.
You can't. You can't implement everything that all of 84 are saying, because that means every farmer would have to hire a bookkeeper, a purchasing agent, and a director. This just doesn't exist. So our farmers deal with it in the best way that they can, and work with the agencies to make it so that it's logical and not bureaucratic. But I will say this, farming in California is becoming very difficult. The public wants small farmers. They want small farmers, but the public is allowing the legislatures to adopt regulations to put the small farmer out of business. So at the end of the day, our public, in this state even, is promulgating to get rid of small farmers with the regulations.
I don't think the general public even realizes that.
They do, in the sense, because...
What, cheaper food?
Cheaper food.
Yeah.
Cheaper food. And this drought is going to change that picture real fast.
Most definitely. Yeah, this is the worst year in recorded history in California for drought. Yeah, it's awful. Hey, off topic a little bit, but I got to ask you. The Nissan, the Farmers League participated in an emergency response a while back when the Fukushima earthquake, the tsunami happened. How'd you guys help? What happened?
What we did, we were contacted by some of our growers, relatives, and families that live in Japan where the tsunami hit, and asked if we could help. So the league went out and put together a campaign called Farmers to Farmers across the United States. We sent money directly to co-ops, farm co-ops in Japan, in Tokyo, in those parts, to where the money would be able to be used directly to buy equipment, clean up the land, seeds, whatever was needed.
So it sounds like no middleman. You just
went direct. No, there was no, that did not go to, it did not go to Red Cross. It did not go to the food center. But it directly went to farm co-ops in those country, in that country, in those town areas. And we raised $21 million across the U.S.
And I take it $21 million will help a lot of people.
It was so greatly appreciated. Even to this day, we still get acknowledgement and calls that the appreciation that our farmers here are helping their farmers in a foreign country, to where they buy our products and we send them products, and they grow products that we grow. But yet, for our farmers to step up without the government of the United States telling us we were going to try to send equipment and do all these things, it was too difficult. So we said, okay, you can't stop us by sending money. So we coordinated the efforts, working with the Japanese consulate and also through the U.S., We were very respectful of our U.S. government, but made it clear that we were not, and they were not going to get one penny of these dollars. It was directly going to go to the farmers of that country.
So you then really orchestrated a clean and fast sweep. I mean, in emergency response, you have to be quick. Otherwise,
you can't wait.
You really have hardship on the other end. In a logarithmic pattern, it's not good. Well, that's great that the organization has that power and that focus and that will to do that. That's wonderful. Hey, back to the Central Valley, the Imperial Valley, Northern California, those farming areas. What's the makeup of the farm worker, you know, the workforce itself, the farm workers?
Well, the makeup is men and women. The type of work is... You're talking about some 400 different commodities. You're talking about a tremendous amount of skills. And I mean skills that are very much learned and are important to their job. They come from, the men and women come from all different countries, from the Central American countries, from Mexico, from even Australia.
Really?
So we have different workforces. But the largest percentage of the farm workers come from the CAFTA and NAFTA countries. which is Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, Nicaragua, that group of folks, and in from Mexico, are probably the five largest countries of workers here. And that workforce in the U.S. is seasonal workforce, is somewhere around 1.6 million seasonal workers.
So they, seasonal workers, meaning they come, they work, and they go home? Is that how that works?
The seasonal worker is that the worker will, in the past, will migrate from state to different parts of the state.
Oh, and follow the
crops,
harvest or whatever.
Follow the harvest.
I see. Yeah.
And today, in California, though, that's not the case. In California, being that we're a state of the weather conditions and until this drought, we are a state that can keep people working at least all year round.
So there's multiple seasons to grow crops here?
Yes, we can grow in the Salinas Valley. We can grow in the winter. When here, we're not growing in the winter, but we're pruning. So we may grow some winter vegetables here or down in Imperial or up in the northern Sacramento Valley.
You know, I can see why it's important to utilize a workforce that has multiple skills. They're doing different things at different parts of the year.
Well, I think the most the example is pruning. To prune a grapevine, you got to know what you're doing. You have to know what you're doing, and you have to understand the varieties of grapevines that we have. Tree fruit, the same way. To take Joe Welfare off of Welfare and have them go out there, that they say it's an unskilled. No, it's a skilled job. You're going to have somebody wire your home. You want somebody that has a skill to wire your home so it doesn't burn down after you turn on the power. It's the same thing. If you don't prune that grapevine correctly, you're not going to have any fruit.
Well, I can relate to this in my own home and property because I'm not a very good pruner, and it shows. So, yeah, that's it takes the time and it takes the direction, I suppose, by a farmer who's on top of everything to assure that these skills are used properly and effectively on a property. What motivates these people to come to the U.S. and work?
Several things. First and most important is they're here because there's work. Number two is they're able to make a good wage and be able to live here as well as to send money home to their families, which really improves their family lifestyles in their countries. No matter if it's the four or five or six countries, the largest countries, the workers come here, they know there's good work, and they know they can make good money and also have a safe working environment in compared to some other countries probably. But they know that the farmers will take care of them. If the farmers were bad and the ranchers were bad, they wouldn't come here. It'd be that easy. That easy. And the farmers and ranchers of this country, of this state, really do appreciate the workers that have been here a long time. Many of the farmers have provided free housing, good housing, to their main folks so that they could be there and they have a safe place to raise their families. We used to have housing camps. We have gotten rid of all of those because the environment of today is that workers need to live in the cities. They need to have police protection, fire protection, need to have access to laundromats, food, health clinics, whatever it is. Because having camps on our farms today, the environment is very, very bad. With prostitution and drugs is huge.
So how did that develop?
That's
amazing. That's just the way it is, I suppose.
Well, how did the gang start? How did our gangs start in our cities?
A couple of bad apples show up and they just start taking control.
That's right. And so on the farms, when there's not cops and sheriffs around 24 hours, the farmer lives down the road, the housing is there, and they know they have access and they know there's workers in there, they'll go to them and offer them whatever. And the next thing you know, the people take whatever there is being offered, and that's a bad situation. So today, the goal of our industry, even with our guest worker program that we're proposing in the Senate, that's in the Senate already, is to have housing in the cities, not on the farms. Now, if a farmer wishes to do that, then he's going to change his way or her way of having housing. And most likely they will have security. They will have all this. Very difficult, very expensive. But at the end of the day, the workers do need to have all of the amenities as anybody else.
It's amazing that with life potentially being so difficult, they still, at least it's been my experience, they have a strong work ethic.
They have a work ethic that shames this country. But our work ethic 40 years ago was as good as the work ethic of many of our farm workers today. But today's public in the United States has a very poor work ethic. This state, we have over 2.5 million people on welfare and unemployment. And those are not those aliens that are here that have document problems. Those are people that are legal citizens, and they don't want to work in our industry. They refuse to work in our industry. We did a huge, big research project in 98 called Welfare to Work, Cal Jobs.
Are you talking about just your average Joe person who doesn't have employment and he's given an opportunity to go into the fields and work and he chooses not to?
Absolutely. We did that in 2012. The UFW even launched a big program.
Yeah.
Ours was huge. Theirs was 10,000. Ours was 1.4 million eligible people. Mm-hmm. And of that, 137 in the valley. And of that, 503 applied. Of that, 3 went to work.
The strong ethic, then, of the people coming from Central America and Mexico, it sounds like they not only have the skills to work in the fields, but they have the will to work under the conditions and for the amount of money that they're provided. That's not even available in America. Boy, it's minimized here in America. It sounds like we're dependent upon a workforce that is traveling around our state and other states.
Well, we're dependent on a foreign workforce because the country, our Congress, has allowed welfare and unemployment to be the employer.
Yeah, well, that only works so long.
Well, it's been on since the 1996 called Welfare to Work Act, signed by the Congress, was to end 5 years. 5 years, and that would have put them in 99, 2000.
And it's still going on in 2014.
And it's still going today, 18 years, 17 years on welfare and unemployment. And not the farmers provide a job for their employees with a wage that is either the state wage or the federal wage or above. In our industry, even last year, we were a buck above the state average, okay? And we provide an environment that is outside or inside, depending on the type of job. And that's what agriculture is. Agriculture is not in a greenhouse. If it was in a greenhouse or in a controlled environment, then the people would be paying $4 for a tomato. And if the cows were all locked up in a confined, you would be paying $15 a gallon. So the ag industry is a outside employer, and it has an inside employer called Packer Processors. But we do provide work. We do provide a very fair and decent wage compared to some of the other industries in the U.S. We've improved in our working conditions. We have introduced more regulations in this state that, in fact, have been, some of them have been good and some of them have been bad because of what it makes the employer do, then the employer has to shut down.
Yeah, has to be implementable.
Yes,
and
has to be workable. It has to be of sense.
What's good? You guys are involved in the before activities related to regulations, as well as during and after. It has to be implemented. Ultimately, it can't be a fairy tale regulation that can't be put to work.
No, and some of the regulations. Don't get me wrong, Steve. They've been good.
Yeah,
they have really made our industry in this state stand out, and also have given more in of going after the bad actor. We have bad actors in every industry. We have bad actors that are thieves and crooks in our legislature, in our banking systems, in stores. I mean, they're all over. That's humans.
Well, people are people. You have that bell curve of...
Yeah.
I totally understand that.
You know, and so if we have a bad farmer or a bad contractor, we try to make sure that that contractor or grower don't farm or don't hire labor.
Yeah. You know, the people that come over and work here, do they bring their families with them? Are they single usually?
Not anymore. The family is gone. That used to happen, but with the regulations for minors under the age of 18 working in fields or in packing houses is so restrictive that you just about, you can't do it, which is sad. Even with our own kids here, they can't work in packing houses or in the fields anymore because of the regulations.
Yeah, I wasn't really thinking of the kids coming over here to work, but, you know, we're not just talking about individuals, you know, a woman or a man coming over here to work, but a family where maybe the mom and dad work and the kids have a relative who watch them. You know, basically they're building a life, which includes a family life, while the parents, either one or both, are working in the fields.
You don't see that as you used to.
Okay.
You have a lot more independent single men and single women coming here to work. And especially the generation of in that 20 to 35 year olds, more than we've ever had. The cost of living here is very expensive just to bring a family. And for a family of a 16 year old not be able to go to work, the father doesn't understand that. So they're not going to bring him here knowing that they can't work, okay? Those that are here already. This is their country, but they're illegal. They're working. That 15-year-old or that 17-year-old or 16-year-old are working in a fast food restaurant or something. Okay.
Yeah.
Most likely they're not in agriculture at all because our employers have just finally, contractors and growers, are just the restrictions for having that person work in the field is so bad, so difficult. And then again, takes away the word that you brought up a while ago was work ethics. We are destroying our system because we don't allow the young adults and the 14, 16, 15-year-olds to work.
I'm just totally guessing on this, but it seems that you know, protecting the kids from working too much. We know that happens in other countries, and I'm sure it even happens here in the U.S. And it's
right.
Sort of, we don't see it, but that's why those regulations are there. But it seems problematic. It seems problematic that if we are providing homes for people in the towns, and then they're taking a vehicle or a bus or something out to the fields, then if they were to take a child who's only, I remember when I was a kid, I mean, I was allowed to work a few hours, but it wasn't supposed to exceed that. You have a logistical issue of getting them back to their, you know, caregivers back in the city again. You know, it's not practical to send a child to get a few hours experience working maybe 2 days a week. And so it's just not done.
Well, just not in my industry. Even from the standpoint of the McDonald's world, the fast food restaurants, the hotels and all that, we've made it to where it is not feasible for an employer to hire a minor. Okay? We have put bad regulations in place, bad ones. Okay? I milked cows when I was 6 years old on my dad's dairy.
And you have positive memories of that.
I have great memories of all of that. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And if I didn't do that, I probably wouldn't have the work ethics that I have today or my friends and et cetera, et cetera. Okay?
Yeah.
But regulations can go too far, and that's what we've done.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what our folks believe is get in your car and go down to the mall right now at 1:30, 2:30 in the afternoon, and look what's in the mall, in any of the sweeping malls. And you go back and turn the clock 30 years ago, and there was none of that. Because those kids had some type of job in a grocery store, stacking, boxing, whatever, mm-hmm. in agriculture, helping their parents.
Yeah, well, I mean, I remember growing up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. we picked up whatever we could, and there was not that much work, but
right.
we were always looking for it. The long list of labor regulations, it's long, the stuff that you have to comply with. What regulations stand out as like really helpful for the farm workers? I mean, the ones that are the strongest.
I think we've done a good job on heat illness. The current regulations that we put in place in 2010 on heat illness in California have been a very positive thing for all sites, for even the grower, even the contractor, even the employer, and the workers to know that they have to drink more water. They have to drink water rather than sugar drinks or even alcohol, because there's a lot of that. And oh, by the way, eat the right foods, okay? So that regulation, we've been doing it in the past before 08, 07, but with a guidance of examples and things that help to reduce heat illness have been a positive, okay? So I can't at all. Some of the responsibilities of farm labor contractor verification. You're being able to go online and see if that contractor really has a license. In the past, you didn't have that. It was difficult.
This is something that a farm worker could use to check and then make sure his employer is up to snuff.
But, well, the employer has to post their name and their number.
So then if it's not possible to find that information on that particular list, would that be interpreted as, these guys are iffy, I don't know if I should work for them?
Exactly. Okay. You can go online. If you got the contractor's name and number, you can go online and see if he or she is legal.
I mean, a lot of these people are Spanish-speaking. They don't speak English, right? So are they able to use the computer in that fashion?
Oh, everybody's got an iPhone. Everybody's got an iPhone.
Yeah, that's true. How would you say the immigrant farm worker benefits the farmer? What does the immigrant farm worker bring a farmer that otherwise would not be available?
Well, I think farm employees versus guest workers, okay? Immigrants refer to all of our cultures, Irish, you name it, okay? So what the farm worker provides to the grower or the worker that's here on a seasonal migrant, or if he's here on a special guest worker program, okay, or the existing worker that's here and he is working here, he or her, they provide, I think, that for the generation of farmers today, is that the skills that those workers have received over the past 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and have allowed that worker to advance from a worker to a foreman to even buying 20 acres of land and still working for the grower, okay? Mm-hmm. The dream of a lifetime, okay? But the workers provide the employer, I think, with certainty, skills, with knowing that we got to get the harvest in, and if we don't get the harvest in, I don't make any money, and next year you may not have a job because I can't afford to grow the crop.
You know, that's interesting. One of the unique fuzzy aspects of a farm worker is they are able, because of their skill set, to reduce the uncertainty and increase resilience in the, you know, nobody can control the weather and other circumstances. So that actually serves as a huge plus to engage in providing some sort of consistent, sustainable work for that workforce.
Our farmers and employers, contractors included, have diversity of farming so they could stay alive, okay? And a worker wants to work 10, 12 months out of the year because that's money they send home to their families or here, okay? They know their job. They know how to pick citrus. They know how to prune. They know how to pick melons. They know how to harvest lettuce or even drive equipment or irrigate, whatever it is, or milk cattle, milk dairy cows. Those skill sets, and the farmer knows that worker, when he's finished with this job, the farmer says, okay, now we're going to go from almonds, we're going to go pruning of our grapes. Okay? That worker knows and has that skill set. But the thing the worker enjoys is that if he could stay working with that employer year-round, that's certainty. Okay?
Yeah.
And that's important. Now, if he is and works for a labor contractor, then that contractor is very important for him, because that contractor is going to find other jobs to keep that worker busy, because that contractor wants that employee to stay with him or her because of their skills.
I mean, that sounds very similar to just general contracting, building homes and whatnot.
No, different.
You try to hold on to the good
best,
help.
The best.
Yeah, yeah. The like any hands-on job, there's health and safety issues. You mentioned the heat illness type things. Are there other things as well that you have to be concerned about in the field?
Food safety. Today, food safety has become a huge issue.
For the farm workers?
For the farm product, the farmer, and the worker. Because today they're making sure that they use the bathrooms.
Oh.
They wash their hands.
Mm-hmm.
They take their breaks. And
how often are breaks? Typically,
the laws gives us for every 4 hours a 10-minute paid break, and workers, and that's a 10-minute paid break, right when they get to the end of the field or in the middle of the field, whatever their timeline that they want to take it at, and they take and really emphasize to take more breaks during the summertime because of the heat to drink more water.
Well, I know when I worked on a hazardous waste site in those white suits, we were dealing with 113 degrees for over a month and started work at 3 in the morning, ended at 1:30 in the afternoon. I see people working in the fields here way into the afternoon on hot days. So they must be acclimatized and provided with a lot of water.
Well, we've changed. We have. In the past years, if it's 100 degrees, our farmers are shut down at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
Because it does the fruit no good. You can't pick hot fruit. It will collapse.
Are there other chores to do other than picking fruit in the afternoons like that?
No, that's
summer?
It.
Oh, okay.
Here in this valley,
yeah.
You either are going to be outside or you're going to be in a packing house, okay? And it's not even good for dairy cows, okay? Their milk starts to drop off, okay? But we have, through the heat illness program, and even before that, because of the quality of the fruit, is that we'll start at 6 in the morning or 5:30 based upon the daylight. And we'll go to 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock. And they'll get in a 7-hour day, okay? Many farmers that will say, look it, the heat is here for a week. We're going to quit every day at 12:30, 1 o'clock, okay? But we're going to pay you a extra amount. We can't put it that you were here until 2:30 because of workers' compensation laws, okay? But we're going to add an hour. We're going to add an hour worth of wage to your wage. So you get an 8-hour day in.
Right,
okay,
right.
So our farmers are doing those things to help keep the workforce. Workers want to keep working, but we know they cannot.
So you really, it's a choreographed activity between farm worker and farmer for this thing really to work and work effectively.
Yeah, you have to be talking together.
Yeah, on those really hot days, is air quality an issue for farm workers?
Air quality on some days is an issue, but when I say it's an issue, on the standpoint of heat, we will shut down if it's not like a school, because it's probably the same as a construction site. But again, if the air quality is bad outside, then we have to still work. Cows still have to be milked. Okay? And I'll tell you this much. The air quality in this valley has improved tremendously.
Has improved?
Tremendously.
What do you think is the reason for that improvement?
Because of all the things we've implemented. Better cleaning, manufacturing plants, boilers, burners, farm machinery, okay, different types of vehicles, newer, cleaner trucks, cars, fireplaces reductions, reduction in agriculture burning. Forestry burning is still an issue, but forestry burning even. All of those things have helped the San Joaquin Valley do a hell of a job better than even any other place. And we're a bowl.
Yeah, I've noticed that. This is the Great Valley, with surrounded by mountains, coastal range on the west, and in the Great the Sierra Nevada Mountains on the east.
But it's not like China with the air quality. So,
well, there's no comparison. Although I understand we're starting to receive some of what China is putting up into the air here on the west coast.
Yep.
Yeah. Interesting. That's something to be dealt with in the future. Now, work is seasonal. You mentioned there's multiple seasons here in California, something unique about California. Do farmers, workers have work to do, a lot of work to do in the wintertime here?
Yes, they do.
They do? Because of the seasonality and
because of the type of crops.
Give me an example of a sequence of crops that would take you through 12 months.
Well, a farmer would have grapes.
Okay. When would that kick
in? We would start pruning the grapes in November.
Okay.
Could be early October, mostly November. As soon as the leaves fall off, they'll start pruning the grapes.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, then they'll go in and tie the grapes. They'll do the wires where the grapevine, the canes rest on the wires. They'll do in post. So that'll get them going clear into March.
Okay.
And then the grapevines start to bud out. Then they'll come back. They'll probably be off for 2 weeks. Then they'll come back and start to do suckering. They'll do, if the bunches start to grow, the grapes, they'll come in and thin the bunches. And then there's an off time. But from that off time, then that worker goes to pick fruit. In May, April, he'll start picking fruit and go clear through September. But at the same time, he may go back to his grapes because it could be table grapes. So he'll pick 2 months of fruit, tree fruit, 3 months, mm-hmm. and start picking table grapes the latter part of July and go clear to September, October, with table grapes. So that process then starts over again.
So that's grapes being the example, and I suppose tomatoes and other things have their own cycle.
They have their own cycles, but there's other vegetables that are coming off. When those end, the other vegetables are coming on.
How many veggies do we have growing here in the Central Valley? We must have an enormous variety.
Well, we have 400 different commodities.
Oh, that's amazing.
Where most states have 7 commodities only.
Yeah. Well, very unique again to California. We feed a lot of people here.
Yep.
You know, it's worrisome to me to see significant droughts as we have this year with respect to a lot of things, but one is to lose a workforce, especially the farming workforce that is something gleaned through many years. How easy is it to create a new one? Well, I mean, if there's no work here, the farm workers have to find work somewhere. We all have to eat and drink, so they may go somewhere else. Can you get them back?
No.
No.
This is their second time through the drought. If some of these workers are going to leave with their families, they're going to go to other states and try to set up housing there, set up their family there, because this drought could last as long as clear into September, October. How do these folks pay their rent? How do they get food? How do they take care of the normal things? So we're asking the government to help. We're asking the state to help. These people are not eligible for unemployment, and that's the most vulnerable one. And so we are working very hard with our state, with our food banks, with USDA and others to make sure that we try to provide enough food in food centers for the next, I mean, they told me they had enough food for 30 days. I said, no, I need 6 months, and I need assistance for rent. I need assistance for the electrical bill.
Did the recent visit by our president, Obama, did that bring any funds for this particular need
this year? It brought some funds.
Okay, good.
Some. But I think being that he came here with his secretary and other folks, I think they saw a different California than North Carolina or South Carolina or Tennessee. They saw a state that has an agriculture in this valley and in Salinas, King City, Imperial, Hemet, Chico, wherever. These people work year-round. And this workforce is a workforce that has document issues. So we have to treat them differently. The Farm Nutrition Program, they can't get on it because it's only for residents or yeah. citizens.
It seems like there are unique characteristics to this group of working people in the fields. And because we don't have your, you know, generally an American public that wants to work in the fields, that maybe we should come up with restrictions so that our country is not taken advantage of, yet recognizes the benefits that are offered through their workforce being active here.
If it wasn't for the workers,
we wouldn't have the food at the prices, certainly.
We wouldn't have the food that we have in this country to feed the world. But if it wasn't for the farmers at the risk that they take every day.
The farmers. Yeah.
Knowing that they're going to grow this crop, and everybody's accusing us of using all this water, okay? It takes water to grow plants.
Yeah.
To produce the food. That the general public has really been very spoiled to not understand where their food comes from. And they have no real passion for the farmer. They have no real passion for the worker. And if we're not careful with that balance, what we could see is an increase of 15 million containers more a year coming in from other third world countries into the ports of this state and other states with food, just like we do with our oil.
Right.
But the public in this state, even with 38 million, they don't ever say thank you to the farm worker, and they don't ever say thank you to the farmer.
I think in part that's because they don't know them. They don't have the opportunity to meet them, to see them. One of the things in some of the smaller counties in our state, certainly up in the mountainous areas, is where everyone's talking, buy locally. Really focus on local farming. Get the age of the farmer from the average age of 60, which is quite old, to the younger farmers. Get our younger people motivated. But you go to our cities, Los Angeles here in California, San Francisco, Sacramento, and people aren't, I don't think, thinking so much about local. They just want the fruit or the veggies when they want them.
Right, and that's naiveness on them.
That's what?
And they're naive.
Yeah.
They're naive in the sense that you tell me they can't think where this came from. They know that in the papers in the last 5 months, there's been a huge amount of press and everything about water. Even the new young man, the Olympian, Jose Ramirez, the fighter, the boxer, is fighting for water. Okay? And that's getting out to those sector of the people. But I think the public needs to say, where does our food come from? And our state secretary needs to say it, or our governor, here's where it comes from. Okay? Now, the governor coming to this meeting with the president was valuable. It really was.
Mm-hmm.
He saw things I thought he, in watching him in that with the president, seeing his responses, told me that he got some things that he didn't know, he wished he knew. So he learned some things and went back and implemented some things.
So you're talking about the California, Governor Brown. Who was here with President Obama when he arrived just a month ago.
Yeah. So I think but we forget to say thank you. We just do.
I think that's common across the board in a lot of categories, not only food, but many other things.
But yeah,
it's a cultural thing.
I can live without a clothing because I can make my own.
Yeah.
You can't live without food. You can't live without milk. Okay?
Yeah.
You can't live without those general necessities. You can't live without water. And all this time, Los Angeles has never had a problem with water. The only problem they have is earthquakes. Okay? And they understand those. But to know that food that's in that grocery store, where did it come from? And it came from 90% of it from this state, from this valley.
Yeah, I think we would benefit from an awareness shift as to where our food comes from. That's really true. I know there's some carbon footprint type thing they do these days in some stores, but even beyond that, I mean, which farm did it come from? In what region of the state or what state? That would be useful. If you were to pick three things to improve the conditions or circumstances for the farm worker right now, what three things would you end up choosing to improve on? Something that's realistic.
Well, I want immigration. I want these workers to get their residency, what is deserved to them, okay? So that they're not taken advantage by the human traffickers and others, or the bad employer.
And how would that,
would give
prevent
them
from getting caught up in that terrible situation?
Because now they're free to go and come and go tell policemen.
Oh, you're saying, so they don't want to go tell a policeman that they've had legal issues because they're going to send them back when the policeman finds
why?
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, yeah.
And second, I would hope that that our state would do a better job about agriculture. The state would. And tell the people how important this industry is and how important these workers and farmers are. The average age, 65, 70 years old. The young generation isn't going to do it because it's too much red tape, too bureaucracy, and you get one paycheck a year. Today's generation has to have a paycheck weekly. And I got to have the skis, and I got to have the nice car, and I can live on the farm, and I'm not going to, I've got to go on vacation every, I've got to go every year. Many of our farmers have never gone on vacations.
So we have expectations in our own country that really are not apropos to a good work ethic.
Well, if our people in the United States realized of where we're headed and the things that we don't respect, we're going to lose it. We are going to lose it.
That's true.
I mean,
it does go away.
Today, you're not allowed to touch your child at all at home. You can't spank your child for doing bad things because they turn you in, okay? So we're going to the extreme. And with the farmers, it's the same thing. You're telling the farmers you want them to produce. You want, here's the water. Oh, but by the way, you can only farm these type of crops. No, I'm sorry, this isn't communist China. This isn't the Soviet Union. This is the United States of America.
I can see farmers getting together amongst themselves in an extremely, well, like this year, where we don't have enough water at all. We're not even close. Zero allocation here in the Central Valley. Anyhow, having farmers get together and maybe choose for themselves what they want to each grow based on how much water is available because you don't have enough around. I mean, how do you make those decisions?
You can't because your equipment is different than my equipment when I'm growing.
And those conversations would have to be made. Is that overly cumbersome to have that kind of conversation?
Yeah, because if you're telling me, well, Mr. Farmer, you need to grow the grain and I'll grow the lettuce.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll grow the grain, but I have to buy a $550,000 combine.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I have to go buy a grain drill. And oh, by the way, my irrigation system or whatever I'm going to use, whatever little water, I have to redesign my whole irrigation system.
So it sounds like they'd have to build in some sort of, I mean, the farming community would have to build in some sort of flexibility to, I'm just thinking out of the box here, sharing equipment or...
You can't.
It just doesn't work.
It doesn't work. You got... Yeah. The uniqueness about our industry is that farmers that know how to farm, the crops they farm, they know how to do it.
Yeah.
And they've been doing it. The workers, the employees, the people that work with our growers also understand that situation, okay?
Yeah.
Farmers have to meet mortgage payments, just like everybody else.
So how do you deal with, this is just my personal opinion. I think farmers, the farming communities are very resilient. I think they do have the capacity to adjust to any circumstance. They're smart people.
But you got to pay the bank.
Well, yeah, you have to pay the bank.
If you don't have water, you don't have workers, then I can't pay the bank.
Well, maybe that's where the focus needs to go. And that's probably why you're involved in the Federal Reserve connections, too, because, it comes down to money like most businesses, and we have to be effective in the field under any circumstance. I mean, people continue to require eating, and our population only increases. So maybe money is where the focus needs to be.
Safe food. They get the most safest food in the world.
Yeah.
And you can't ask for a country like ours to produce the most safest food, okay?
Yeah.
Farmers... farm. They're farmers. The farm employees are farm employees. They know their jobs. They love their jobs. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they've been doing it generations to generations. So the key to it is that farmers are resilient. There is no doubt about it. If they only got 2 acre feet of water, then they're going to figure out what trees to save or what vegetable to plant and don't plant that. Okay? They're going to know that.
Well, that's the strategy that would be discussed amongst all farmers.
Well,
that's probably going on right now, isn't it?
Well, there's a lot of discussion on what areas and how much water I can get. Mm-hmm. Now, I know some farmers that gave water to Orange Cove when they had no water. The farmer did not put water on his crop, but gave the water to the city. Now, you tell me what city person would give their water up.
Yeah, I know. Okay. I've had those discussions.
A farmer gave up his water to feed the city and let his trees go. You tell me what anybody living in L.A. or San Francisco would give up their water or their for their neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to do it.
Well, that's a success story that I would like to visit with. Yeah. You'll have to give me the name of those. But that is the behavior that keeps people together. You know, an hour goes really fast.
Yeah, I've got to run.
I know you've got to run. And so anyhow, I want to thank you, Manuel, for the time we've spent together today. And I'll tell you, extend a respectful thank you also to all the farm workers and farmers that you come across, because I think what they're doing is very, very important, certainly in California's breadbasket.
No, they are without either. You can have a farmer, but you can't have a farm worker. You don't get the job.
Yeah.
So it takes both, and they both respect each other. Our farmers respect their employees tremendously and their families, and they want their families to be given the greatest opportunities. And that's why we have fought so hard to get immigration done, because the farmers want their workers and their families legal so they don't have to worry the fear of raids and targets and human traffickers taking advantage of these people because of their status.
Mm.
And that's what our biggest goal has been for the past couple of years, and especially now with the water crisis, the human traffickers are more relevantly out there to cause tremendous harm. And so, but both need each other, the worker and the farmer together.
Well, I think the hour that we spent together shares a lot of things that many people are not aware of. So again, thanks for your time, and keep on rolling down the road here. Lots of improvements are needed, and it sounds like you guys are right on top of it.
No, but thank you, Steve.